Welcome to the Coach Haas Podcast, powered by Sports Rehab PA, along with our sponsors.
By Optimizers Masszymes, 100% plant-based, naturally derived, best digestive enzyme blend out there right now. Highly concentrated with enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. Helps to relieve indigestion, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals. Take it with the meals to enhance the digestion and nutrient absorption. Also helps to improve recovery after hard exercise and hard efforts. So go to buyoptimizers.com and use code JUICY for 10% off. Kaelor Core Training Systems. The Kaelor Core Column Training is the next step in the evolution of strength development, preventing training injuries, and elevating core fitness to maximize athletic performance. The column core is used to help remap the central motor patterns for functional movements to ensure that the movement quality is efficient before loads and demands. Helps to increase strength, flexibility, and speed by 16%, reduces training injuries by 75%, works quickly in 6 short weeks, helps to strengthen the core and the back. Used with multiple Olympic-level athletes, NCAA athletes, as well as pro athletes in the NFL and other sports. Visit KaelorCore.com to find out more about the training systems. Also, check out Fit Life and Sports Rehab, Ivy Rehab, for understanding the systems as well in this facility.
This is a podcast that was inspired by our curiosity in several areas, and some of those include sports performance, sports injury, team training, recovery nutrition, ACL rehab and recovery, personal development, and fitness entrepreneurship. We also have a 15-minute segment called the 15-Minute Juice.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Juice, where we discuss physical therapy, rehabilitation, return to sport after injury, training, and all things fitness, while also answering burning daily questions, broach the juiciest weekly topics, and educate the masses on the proper algorithm for optimizing their lifestyle. It's fast, it's concise, it's informative, it's juicy.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the 15-Minute Juice. Mike, we have a special guest on tonight. I'll start with a little hint. I'll say, go Navy, beat Army. And that'll give us a little hint on who we have on tonight. We have Allison Breger on, and she is a neuroscientist with the U.S. Army. And we're going to discuss tonight a little bit about sleep and load management and circadian rhythms, and we're going to kind of get ourselves educated on that, which is kind of perfect at this point because I have been struggling recently with some sleeping because I've been dealing with some tinnitus and some you know, little issues here and there. But I do have my Whoop on, and I have been measuring everything. And that's kind of going to be the segue into that's how we found you. Well, I'll say we, but I use Mike and I as a collective here. Mike heard you on the Whoop podcast and felt like this was an absolute necessary to get you on, considering the population that we're dealing with right now. It's really 13 to 19-year-old female soccer players is our major, I'd say, contributor to what we're seeing. But we do see athletes outside of that. But this kind of just fits in perfectly to what we're doing. So I want to thank you for your time. I know you're just getting done work. You're doing your interview or your portion of this in your car, which I really appreciate you, you know, putting the time and effort forward to do this. So thank you
for
doing this at 8:30 at night. This could be messing with our circadian rhythms. You know, the sun is down. Usually I'm at sunset on Thursday night, so we're all making sacrifices tonight. So again, thank you so much for coming on to the show tonight.
Oh, no, absolutely. Actually, this is a brand new Ford Bronco too, so I might as well show it off. So
Damn right.
I never could afford having, you know, a nice car in high school. But I definitely feel like I'm in high school again, because, you know, graduating in the late 90s, all the cool popular kids had the Bronco. So
yeah,
I finally lived that time of my life now.
Hey, hey, it's better late than never.
Right, exactly.
So what I want to do is, like how we always start, is give us a background into what you do and how you got to that position, and then we'll start firing questions away at you.
Sure. You know, I'm a big believer in planning your career around your lifestyle, rather than your lifestyle around your career. Because, you know, life is long and enduring. And if you don't love what you do, then it's just going to be a miserable life. So I've been an athlete my whole life. I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, probably one of the worst places you could grow up, at least in the late 90s. We had the highest murder rate in the country. So like being an athlete in high school, then I always knew my ticket out of town would be sports. It's not a coincidence, I think, that we have a lot of, just incredible athletes that come from Youngstown. I mean, so much so, I know ESPN has done a documentary on it. And so that really fueled my passion, is I always wanted to be a professional athlete. I did gymnastics growing up, found track and field. Did really well in track, competed in college at Brown. Thought maybe I could make the Olympics someday. But I also knew like education was important too. So I went to graduate school, and honestly in graduate school, I always loved biology. I always loved exercise, and I always, you know, prioritized sleep. So somehow in some way I was able to like merge those three areas and focus on biology, focus on the brain science of exercise and how sleep impacted the brain. And quite honestly, I've just made a career out of it. Spent a little bit of time in academia as a professor, realized just culturally, I didn't fit in. You know, a lot of academics, they're not athletes, if that's the nicest, kindest way to put it. I mean, incredibly smart people,
yep.
But they don't understand training and why people train. And so I think a lot of times my colleagues couldn't believe that I could be successful academically in addition to training. So around that time I was competing in the CrossFit Games, and, So I left, and I got lucky in that I found a job with the military. And my first day when I was at Walter Reed, the department chair of neuroscience came up to me and he's like, "Hey, have you ever thought about commissioning?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I always wanted to serve, especially since 9/11. A lot of my family's from New Jersey and New York. And, you know, I saw the direct impact of 9/11 on my family." And I was like, "Really? I can join the Army at 33? And so next thing you know, I was commissioned in the Army within 4 months, thanks to Colonel Sipos. And, wow. It's just been great. Like I love it as a career, and like culturally and mindset, you know, especially now I work with special operations. It's like, we all do very different things. Like, you know, a lot of the guys I work with are Green Berets and truly American heroes. I mean, they've done missions and, you know, been on task forces that have gone after those high value targets of our country. But those of us on the support staff, we all do different things. We have engineers, we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have scientists, all in very different disciplines. And no, it's a pretty good A team, and I love it.
That's incredible. That is really, really neat. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just saying that, you know, when I heard you on the Whoop podcast, Allison, I always listen to it. I mean, that's one of my favorite podcasts. I love the arsenal of people that they bring on, and just collectively who Will and Kristen are able to capture to bring on there, and just all the things you were talking about. And I said, and what really resonated with me was when you said how, you know, trying to go into local high schools and educate and talk about it, especially after you had mentioned that in 2013, the NCAA had the highest suicide rate. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, this is a major issue going on, is the mental health. And this is something that Joe and I directly deal with, is dealing with, you know, high school, especially females, and mm-hmm. dealing with what's going on with them. And being a physical therapist, you know, these insurance companies think it's just cut and dry, just exercising this. You know, the parents think this stuff is a quick fix. I mean, there's an epidemic just blowing through the country, and now it's even international, because I think the who is it, the captain for England for female soccer, she just went down an ACL, and there's a big article coming out about that, and just like what is going on. And you know, I think when you said about it's, you know, trying to do these small talks sometimes doesn't get the point across. You need a collective, like, international conference of multiple professionals. And that's really what Joe and I try to do on our podcast, is try to bring on as many professionals outside of what we're doing to kind of get some voices in, because the more people saying this, getting in front of the coaches and also for the kids to listen to, and even the parents, hopefully it'll help. Because where we are here in Bucks County, PA, the sports are very competitive. I mean, it does Yeah, it does produce some, you know, really, you know, I mean, D1 level athletes, you know, some go pro. You know, and I grew up in Central Jersey, so I know it was like with soccer is very competitive. And it's just gotten just worse over the past 20 years with the clubs and the push. And it's just an uphill battle to try to go, it's like going against the grain to try to do the right thing. And I think that that's why a lot of PTs and healthcare professionals burn out, because it's a lot of hard work to do what we're doing, you know, and it's also a lot of education. And sometimes you just talk until you're blue in the face, and just parents just still don't get it. Kids still don't get it, you know. So if we could get more, you know, individuals, especially somebody, you know, your prestige and your level, what you're doing, to speak about, you know, some of the things that you talked about on the Woo podcast here, hopefully that'll resonate and really set the tone. Because even full transparency, I think that sometimes, you know, maybe parents think that Joe and I are just trying to sell them on like a business. Like, we're just trying to get people to come into our clinic, you know, for PT business, and Joe to make his money for his programming. And it's like, you know, it's more than that. We're in a very selfless profession where we're trying to help people. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other things you could do if you just want to make money. But you know, I'm investing so much time, and so is Joe, into trying to help somebody else's child, because someday that's going to be my daughter. And I would be infuriated if you hear the things like what's going on in these other facilities, and what some people are scamming people on who don't know any better. I mean, we're in these ACL, you know, Facebook groups, and you see the stuff the parents are coming across and telling us, and are like, wow, this is scary. People are selling you on stuff because you don't know any better. Yeah. So this podcast is really a good resource for just the right information and trying to get it, you know, in front of the right people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned like you're in such a selfless profession, and I totally agree. So a lot of my outside of, you know, so many battle buddies of mine who are PTs in the Army, when I think back to, because, you know, I'm at that time of my life where like mentors and teachers and people I really looked up to as kids have passed away. Either expectedly or unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And when I think of two individuals in my life who really had a true game-changing moment in my own athletic career, it's Dr. Russo. He was our local physical therapist in Youngstown. And he recently just passed away out of the blue from a heart attack. And that like shook me up, because he really, I had a pretty major rotator cuff tear my junior year of high school that I miraculously competed on at the state meet and podiumed and all of that. I'm not sure how I did that, but he really is the one who introduced me to like functional movement screens and functional movement patterns, and, you know, really helped me recruit the right muscle groups. And I really do credit him for, making me as strong as I was. And then later in life when I did CrossFit, I mean, I'm like a 13-year CrossFit veteran. I've competed in every single CrossFit open season, competed in the CrossFit Games, all of that. It's because of those functional movement patterns and recruiting the right muscles that Dr. Russo taught me, that like, if I didn't have that, I guarantee I would have suffered the same fate that every other CrossFitter has, you know, 3 or 4 years into their career with separated labrum or AC joint or something. So you guys really are, I think you have a greater impact on kids than you realize.
You know, sometimes we get these messages and we get these things. And again, like you said, being in your career for as long as you have now, you have so many athletes that you've been able to impact. And when you get that text message, or you get that, we have several kids coming back that are going to help intern over the summer that were actual patients of ours at one point that are now going into these careers because of they saw what an impact we were able to make. And so at this point, you know, it's about paying it forward. It's about educating these younger athletes who want to then go and train younger athletes. And so I feel like in at my time in my career, this is what I need to be doing is paying it forward. And like Mike said, it is a little bit, you know, it's tough on us because I'm a parent. I have two boys, one's 25, one's 22, and played competitive soccer for a very long time. And because of the information that we had, it helped us, you know, but if a parent doesn't know what to expect from an ACL injury and they're having 10 different parents on a page giving them advice, which by the way, like, yes, your kid went through it, but that doesn't make you really certified to be giving like advice. I know you're trying to console and be supportive, but when you're dealing with something so traumatic so quickly, and then you're getting inundated with information all over the place, it gets confusing. And so what we're trying to do, like Mike said, is just really dial it down and really bring on people that have value, that can really add another level to what we're doing. And I created a free course, and I basically have taken highlights from all the interviews from surgeons and other PTs and other ACL experts to show these parents, this isn't about money. This is a free course that we're giving you to just show you, listen, ask these questions, look for this type of testing. Like, these are the metrics that you should be meeting going back to return to play. There's no scam. There's no fear mongering here. These are just, these are facts, you know, that we're putting together. If you do all these things right, it still doesn't guarantee that it won't happen again, but I believe that it will definitely lessen your risk of it happening again. And we're seeing on the page, second tear, third tears, you know, meniscus on top of three tears. And, you know, so it's just a shame. But again, you know, instead of beating a dead horse about it, we want to continue to just give out the best information. So can you kind of get into a little bit of the sleep recovery and how important that is, and a little bit about load management?
Yeah. I mean, really, sleep is just like any other biological process of the body. For every body that's in motion, rest is essential, right? It's like Newton's second law. For every reaction, there's an equal opposing reaction. So the more workload you have in a day, the more downtime you necessitate. And we're fortunate we have a natural, free, and most powerful recovery tool at our disposal, which is sleep. But, you know, sleep is, it's certainly better now than it's been, at least in my culture, right? The military, and your culture too, the military. It's in the last two decades. But that's why sleep exists, is your brain and your skeletal muscle and your organs keep track of how much workload and how much stress they've been through over the day. And at night when you sleep, if you set up your environment correctly and you clear your mind and just let your body recover, it absolutely will. But it's a matter of discipline, because you have to make sure you're going to bed early enough. You have to make sure you're, you know, not watching TV up until the very last minute. You're not on your phone. You're actually doing something that's relaxing for you instead of stimulating. And you're reducing the light levels and the stimulation levels in your house. Then your body's just going to do what it naturally does and recover through sleep.
Now, I've hit some of those checkpoints, because I've been literally, since I got this back in January, this was something that I turned 50 this year, and it was something I really wanted to make a more conscious effort on. And I can see on the days that I take my magnesium at night, I cool the room down. I have a fan going. Now, again, some of these things have been kind of counter some of the tinnitus that I'm dealing with. So I have the fan going. We drop the temperature in the house down to about 69. You know, the magnesium. I have my blue light blockers on from 7 o'clock on to the end of the night. And I can totally see the difference when I wake up. If I'm on 5 hours or 5.5 hours of sleep, which isn't enough, I can still read my Whoop and I can see that I'm still getting optimal amount of recovery in that time frame. Yes, it should be about 7 hours, and they're constantly reminds mm-hmm. me I should be going to bed a little bit earlier, maybe sometimes 7:30, a little too early, but you know,
yeah.
But still, this has really helped me track so much more of that. So, you know, just the checkpoints that I've gotten there. The days that I don't do that, the late night eating, I can see that, you know, yep. Maybe sometimes I'm waking up in the middle of the night, or I wake up and I feel groggy, you know? So I definitely have gotten better with that. But what are some tips other than some of the things I kind of just said? Well, you know, what would you recommend?
Well, you just listed off most of them right there. I would say other things that we don't even think about is like entertainment at night. Like, I think everyone knows that light at night is bad, and you could buy blue light blocking glasses to reduce the amount of blue light exposure. But that doesn't negate the fact that you're watching an action-packed movie, or say you're on TikTok. Honestly, before the whole selling our data to China fiasco with TikTok came about, like, I had to get off TikTok, because even if I was on it and I had my blue light blocking glasses on, I realized that it was giving me insomnia, because mm-hmm. I would just get so amped up by like what I was watching on my feed that I would have issues falling asleep. Yeah. But it does like nuanced things that you don't even think about. Or, you know, performance anxiety. Now, mm-hmm. one thing I will say is for athletes is, and really my high school or college track coach used to say this, is she would always tell us, make sure you're getting a good night of sleep 2 nights before you compete. Because if you actually care about what you do, you won't sleep the night before a game. 100% true. You should not be sleeping the night before a game, or like use that as your night of good rest, because even if you're, you know, post-collegiate and like a CrossFitter like me, like I still get nervous for competitions, even if I have no chance whatsoever of going back to the CrossFit games, mm-hmm. because I care. And so that performance anxiety will interfere with your sleep, which is okay the night before a game. But if you have that sleep leading up to the game, that's good, then you're going to be protected from that poor night of sleep.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, these are the issues that we're dealing with our population. You know, we're dealing with basically, you know, not fully developed males and females who are being pushed to 3-hour practices. Yes. They have tournaments all weekend, and then the coaches have them practice after that. You know, they do the 3-hour practices, they come home, they still have homework to do. Now, if they're injured, you know, they still have to do some attendance to the practices, and they're coming in and they're doing therapy. And if they're doing therapy with us, they're actually working. So they're sweating, you know, they're actually doing stuff they haven't been doing. I mean, they're exhausted with how we're building yeah. out our model. I don't know how much they're eating. I don't know how much they're drinking, especially if we're doing blood flow restriction training with them. I have to make sure that they're hydrated, because that's a big thing to make sure that they're not getting dizzy, things like that. It's happened yeah. a couple times. I mean, they just are not getting enough of the sleep that they need, not to mention that teenagers just need more sleep. So really what's going on, you know, with the push for it, is that they have to be constantly involved in these sports, because the pressure is, well, if you're not involved, you're not going to get seen. You're not going to get recruited. You have to do a winter club or program to bridge the gap to the spring program, like all this stuff that they're yep. getting sold on that they need to do. And it just doesn't make sense, because, you know, I have these kids coming in and some of them are like zombies. They're just not yep. there, and you're having them try to perform. And I'm like, you can't even do this stuff in a closed environment. How are you doing 3 hours of practices, and how are you competing? Then we wonder why ligaments are tearing, which is doing the simplest of things. Yes. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that from your perspective on just some of the stuff in your experience of what you've dealt with in dealing with this type of situation?
Yeah. So I'll start with adolescent sleep. You're absolutely right. Adolescents not only need more sleep, they need like 10 hours of sleep on average. And not only that, but their clock, their biological clock of sleep-wake rhythms naturally delays itself with puberty. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. We do now because, so I actually worked with a woman who did that, who made that discovery when I was at Brown as an undergrad. I started my career with Dr. Mary Karskadon, who, quite frankly, I think she got gypped out of the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine a few years ago. They gave it to a few other sleep physiologists, circadian biologists, but I think Mary deserved it more because her finding really changed public health. But Mary found that as a teenager is going through the different stages of puberty, there's five of them, that the nighttime rhythm of melatonin naturally delays itself. And there's essentially nothing that can change this. There actually are a few graduate students in our field who have done dissertations full of negative results because it didn't matter what kind of light manipulation they did or whatever kind of, you know, social manipulation they did. The clock of these kids could not delay it, or it always delayed. There was no influence on this very powerful biological phenomenon. So that's something that I think a lot of parents and a lot of athletes don't realize is, you gotta plan accordingly. Like, I know not every school system has adopted Mary's research to change their school start time, because that's really what Mary's research has done. But for those school systems who don't have later school start times now because of Mary's research, you got to plan accordingly. Like, you know, honestly, this is something I used to do when I was in high school. So I was a two sport athlete. I was also valedictorian of my high school. And, you know, I did go to an Ivy League for college. I was training 6 hours a day. So maybe I shouldn't say that, but I was, here's the thing. I was a two sport athlete though. So I did 3 hours of gymnastics practice, which is normal. And then I did track and cross country. So I would pretty much be practicing from like 3:45 PM to 8:45 PM. Except it was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So on Tuesdays, I only had track practice. And on Thursdays was off for gymnastics and off for track. But what I would do is I would come home and I would like eat dinner as I was doing homework. And I would literally prioritize the homework that I knew I had to get done and I couldn't do like the next day in first period or second period. Like I would do all my first, second, and third period homework first, and then save fourth, fifth, and sixth if I didn't finish it in time for like the next day or like during lunch. And I know this is probably like bad strategies I'm giving parents, but I just, you know, the bottom line is I think as athletes, you have to learn to be efficient. Like that's why athletes go on and become successful in the professional world is because you learn time management and you learn planning and efficiency and scheduling, and you figure out what's most important and you just do it.
Yeah. I mean, and that, like you were saying, like the load management, if you can understand that, and that just like we were talking about with the menstrual cycle and things like that, what I've kind of researched some of that stuff and found that, you know, obviously you can't sit a bunch of female athletes because they're going through their menstrual cycle. But if you're aware of what phase you're in your cycle, then you're going to plan better. Maybe it's better hydration. Maybe it's an iron supplement. Maybe it's more sleep, but it's about management and how you're handling it. So that makes a lot of sense. So the 6 hours isn't necessarily wrong, right? Because it's things that you have to accomplish. But like you just said, if you prioritize that the right way, then for the most part, you can get away with it. But we're not really seeing that on our end. Like Mike was saying, some of these kids are coming in like zombies. They're not eating. They're not hydrated.
Yep. You know, they're not sleeping.
They're not sleeping, right?
Yeah.
So what are some things that you would say maybe other than the nuances of like the television and certain things that you're watching, what would you say as far as eating wise, is there a certain things that you would steer away from as you get later into the night to prevent you from insomnia or bad nights of sleep? And then the second part of that question is, what would you recommend?
Yeah, no, excellent question. I will say, just to caveat the 6 hours, because I don't want I do come from a family of professional athletes. My one cousin played professional football. My great uncle played professional football, and both of my uncles, blood uncles, were professional boxers. So I, even though my parents didn't play sports, like, I know I have the genetic gift of athleticism and recovery from my family's history. So again, I was training 6 hours a day, but it's because I genetically could handle it. But I also was getting enough sleep and I was eating good food. So when it comes to food, and I don't think this is something I knew in high school, but so my family is Middle Eastern and Mediterranean. So I grew up on a Mediterranean diet, right? Like lean protein, good carbs, low sugar. And that's really what it is, like, that promotes good quality sleep and overall good health, is lean protein, low sugar, good carbs. So as athletes, like, you got to eat before bed. I know, you know, like, I'm at that age now, I intermittently fast because I'm not working out 6 hours a day anymore, right? I'm working out an hour. But when I was training and when I was at my peak, I would have like a slow release casein protein, or something like oatmeal before night. Something that was like low on the glycemic index, because you want to keep your blood sugar as low as possible before you go to bed. And the reason for that is because spikes in blood sugar can actually create insomnia at night. We actually know now that there are actually sleep promoting foods. There's the neurochemical that helps facilitate sleep is serotonin. So kiwis, walnuts, and even things like warm milk. So there's a group of scientists recently who were able to isolate the proteins in warm milk. So not like room temperature milk, but like actually warm milk. And they found that there's a sleep promoting compound in it. And that compound has since been isolated and it's going under like testing and evaluation for like sleep medication. So your food does matter, like, and it will impact your sleep, especially if you are eating a high fat, high sugar food. Like, I know some people like to trick and convince themselves that like chocolate ice cream is good for them before bed, but no, that's not doing anything.
I just am amazed that the, you know, when you mentioned about the lack of research and the small percentage that there is on females, and that's been a real popular topic coming out. And that's something that I think has really been sparked by Whoop, since, you know, the device and the wearable is accessible now. And they've been tracking down a lot of Olympic level and pro level female athletes, starting to get these metrics and looking at what's going on with women and actually getting data they never had before. Like when you had mentioned, you know, the small percentage of research that was done, and what'd you say? I think they don't even use female rats for research.
Oh, they have to now. But yeah, when I was going through the ranks, no, you didn't have to. I mean, it wasn't until like a few years ago. And even then, there's loopholes you can do because of the menstrual cycle, right? Because it creates so much variability that even when I sit on grant review panels for animal model research, it's like, we're not using this because it creates too much variability because of the menstrual cycle, hands down.
Wow.
I mean, that's like, you know, that's how they justify it. No. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, we're just, you know, we're dealing with the amount of females that are, you know, and just the performance demands that are on them, trying to explain that it's more than, you know, one thing that they just don't know how to move right, teaching them how to do that. You know, but, you know, when you're looking at the 3-hour practices, you know, they can't handle these demands because it's like diminishing returns after the first hour. They're exhausted, because if I have them in the clinic and they're doing just 15 reps or something and they're exhausted, I mean, a lot of them can't even do split squats. They can't even squat regular. Their ankles are locked up. They have no control of their spine. And then you wonder why after practice they're going home and putting heat on their back and lying on Advil. And I mean, these are, you know, anywhere from 13 to 19 year old females. And I'm just saying, you know, as a parent, how do you think that that's normal? And as a coach, how do you look at your players and say that this is actually enhancing performance? I mean, if you're that beat up after what you're doing, this isn't beast mode. This is the body's not handling it, you know? And I mean, they, you know, it's just a time under tension that they're there. I mean, and I understand that training principle because, you know, I've done, you know, the CrossFit style workouts. I've done the hero wads. Those are absolutely brutal. I mean, I don't have the genetic build to do some of those hero wads, like the Mannion with, you know, 400 meters and back squats. I'm not built like that, but there's some other ones that I'm able to handle because I train for the, you know, the Spartan races and do that competitively.
Yeah.
And that's been the most grueling demands that I put my body through, but understanding how do you, you know, how do you scale that? How do you prepare for these type of demands? And just thinking about what you're able to do just even in 30 minutes with like an AMRAP style workout, you know, and just thinking about what these kids are doing for 3 hours, it's almost like it's the same thing over again. How much of these drills can we constantly practice? You know, why can't we dedicate some of that time to maybe doing just some of the strength training or maybe give some of that time back, some of the time in the week for them to actually rest or get to sleep a little bit earlier. And then you have some days where there are longer practices. It's just, it's almost like it's the same thing just over and over again, day in and day out. And it's like feast or famine, whoever makes it through. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So, and it's hard for us to try to explain that because sometimes I feel like maybe it's like the parents don't believe us. They're like, well, what do you know? This is what the coaches say we got to do. And this is what we need to do to get a scholarship. You know, but I mean, from your perspective on, you know, what you've dealt with athletes at different levels and even dealing with special forces, you know, like what can you talk about that in terms of like the amount of volume that's necessary and, you know, what you've seen in terms of maybe changes they're making with dealing with military training or, you know, high level athlete training?
Yeah, no, excellent segue because, you know, I think you bring up a great point. It's the repetitive nature and there's no variability across the week, right? So let me clarify. When I was doing gymnastics for 3 hours, there's four different events in gymnastics that test many different athletic attributes. And quite honestly, a lot of the time we weren't going high intensity, right? We were practicing our choreography. We were doing like dance routines. And then we'd have like little rotations where we do like body weight conditioning. So in that 3 hours, there's probably more rest than work, which is probably why I fell in love with CrossFit. And then also there's just different athletic domains and muscle groups being tested, not the same repetitive ones over and over again. It's the same thing, you know, with CrossFit too. Like you could do CrossFit for 13 years like me, if you just trust the process and follow the program. Like a lot of people, you know, like to criticize the HQ program, but why is it that year after year at the games, those are the workouts that end up appearing at the games? You know, it's not these unique niche programs that have come out of Mayhem or Proven and all that. You could do CrossFit HQ programming. There's a method behind the madness. And if you've taken the certification course, you are testing different muscle groups, both upper and lower body, thoracic area, you know, posterior, anterior chain all week. And I think that's where it's a lack of knowledge, right? The coaches can't see beyond just hitting the ball or hitting the racket. And it's the same thing with special forces too. You know, one of the things that I found most interesting since working with the Army communities is about 60 to 80% of what you do in the day is cognitive in nature. Like, 20% is physical and you go real hard, but the other rest of the time is cognitive. And quite honestly, that cognitive fitness does extrapolate into physical fitness. A lot of people don't believe me yet, but believe it or not, e-gamers actually are able to get their heart rate up to levels that CrossFitters are. And I know that for real, because when I was competing on the Army's CrossFit team, we actually had a sister esports team, and they were on the Whoop platform too. And honestly, their metrics when they were in the zone practicing or playing their games looked no different than ours.
Wow.
So you know, I say all that because I think coaches, one, they don't know the research. They're ignorant of rest cycle periodization schedules, and they also just can't believe that you could be fit without just, you know, hitting the ball or hitting the racket all the time. And that's really what it takes, is going beyond your like preconceived beliefs, because maybe there's something you did.
Well, it's not a hand-me-down programs too, right? You see that with, well, my coach did this in the late 80s, and now this is what I'm going to do with the team. Well, guess what? Research has proven that it's time to make changes, and they're the ones that are stubborn and are not making changes. But I hear that a lot. Well, this is what my coach did, and we've debated the two-mile thing forever for fitness for soccer. Like that, we've found out was a military test that was arbitrarily put together and is now literally taken over the high school summer program. Like this is part of your packet. You need to complete it. First off, they're running more than 2 miles in a game. Okay. And they're not running it at a steady state. So why are we it's completely changing the energy system that we're training.
Yeah,
so you've actually made your athletes slower over the summer because you haven't worked on any sprint work. There's no sprinting. There's no 100 meters. There's no 200 meters. There's no 400 meter runs. It's all you need to do a mile or 2 miles. And, you know, like, and to me, when these athletes tell us like, oh, I worked out yesterday, I ran 2 miles. They took the lesser of the two evils.
They did.
The path of least resistance to say that they worked out.
Or it's to the extreme. It's like 20, 200 meters. Right. Why are we doing 20? Why don't we work on efficiency in those 200 meters? And let's see what the times is or see how we feel, because maybe those last 15 are just trash and we're just trashing our body to get it done, just to say we did 20, 200 meters. What's the point of that?
Yeah. You know, and that's, as you know, like the danger in the CrossFit community too, is like people cherry pick programs and workouts because they see what other people are doing on Instagram. But what you realize is you don't know what the longevity of those folks are. And quite honestly, it's probably very small longevity. I feel the challenge because I had that. So I was a high school track coach at one point in time when I was in graduate school. I coached for a D1 high school in pole vault, long jump, and high jump. I did use my collegiate coach's program, but in all fairness, we had very little injuries and it was very like modest programming. Like she was able to produce D1 level athletes who are able to podium at the Ivy League conference and the ECACs and go on to compete in the NCAAs, but it was all within moderation. And I think that's really when I learned like the art of moderation, and it's about intensity. It's not the volume, it's the intensity that matters in most of these sports. And you know, we could talk about CrossFit for a long time, but yes, some CrossFit does, those new programs get it wrong a lot of times where it's all about volume and then you lose the intensity. I will tell you some of the fittest times of in my CrossFit career have been programs of high intensity with little volume. And that's what I do now. Like I do an hour of training a day and I still feel like I'm as fit as I was when I was doing 4 hours a day of training.
Wow.
Well, that's what Joe and I were starting to try to implement. You know, Spartan Race came out with this DecaFit. It was like more of a inside version of hybrid fitness. Not as intense as the German version, Hyrox. Hyrox tends to be.
Oh, yeah. I did Hyrox when it first came out.
We
finished third at the it was like right before COVID. I'm pretty sure I probably got COVID.
It was
there.
In what, New York?
Yep.
You definitely have to have some good size and be able to handle the volume. I mean, it's 1,000 meter running between a lot of volume of those movements, and it takes a lot of training. A lot of the guys who crossed over from some of the shorter distance and Spartan Race to do it, but they have the size and the capacity to be able to move a rower, move a skier, move a sled, you know. But regardless, just the concept of doing that functional fitness, of doing movements that are going to challenge the muscles that are demanded in your sport, but without really having to do sport-specific stuff. And then you can maybe mix in a little bit, like do these movements and then take a couple shots on net, see how you look. Do these movements and then do, you know, a couple of, you know, ball tossers or skill moves, because then you're getting that cross training. And to us, it kind of makes a little more sense. What we're trying to do is build the kids up to that volume. I mean, you can't really condition and do programs for them if they can't even execute a squat or, you know, a split squat or a lunge properly. You know, that's what a lot of those type of movements require. So we just realized that a lot of the kids can't move properly and then just have enough energy to do that, you know? So I think there's a big thing with that hybrid fitness. Yeah, I think CrossFit, you know, has definitely arguably been, you know, the biggest fitness movement the world has seen. Same thing with Spartan Race, you know, the functional fitness. It makes sense. And, you know, you still have to do your foundational strength and conditioning work, but, you know, the concept of doing that stuff, it's just, it demands what the human body is supposed to do, you know?
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, quite honestly, not to get too down the political road, I think if Greg Glassman didn't say what he said during COVID, he would have 100% been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, because I don't think anyone has done anything for worldwide obesity, fitness, and health than Greg Glassman.
And I think
seeing that early on.
Obesity is up to like what, 40%, you know, now. And I think that, you know, part of the thing that I keep coming back to is why some of these injuries happen is just because I think that, you know, the more we try to make society convenient for ourselves, the more we're working against what the human body's meant to do. We're not meant to sit. I mean, you don't even have to get up and order food now, you know? So I really love the next episode that's actually on the Whoop podcast. They bring on Andy Galpin and he's talking about.
Oh yeah. He's a good friend of mine. He and I actually go way back to graduate school. Yeah.
He's amazing. He's been on the Barbell Shrug podcast with Anders Varner and you know, all these guys talking about it. And I've listened to him for years and it just makes sense what he talks about. Like, you know, if you never do the stairs, well, guess what? Next time you do 12 steps, that's going to be basically a one rep max split squat for you. So, I mean, I even have older population, you know, in a clinic as well, and they want to go do gardening. But when I actually teach them how to hip hinge properly and actually use their legs, they can't even do 10 reps without having to take a sit break. And that's why your back is screaming, because you're using your back the whole time you're doing gardening. But when you actually have to use your leg muscles, they are so weak, you can't do 10 reps. It's amazing. And then you try to justify that to insurance companies or to Medicare. And they're just like, well, you know, can they walk? You know, can they do this? And it's like, you don't understand how deconditioned these people are. They can't do the basics. It's really scary about how the more convenient we make things for ourselves, the more we're slowly killing ourselves as a human species. And you see it's happening to our youth. I mean, I said something that I think really resonated with a handful of people. If you take all these adolescents now and you line them up when they're 30, 40 years old, you're going to be able to tell what generation they're from, because they're all going to have scars on their knees. They're going to be like, they're going to pick them out and be like, oh, you were part of the ACL epidemic, just like the baby boomers, just like World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans. This adolescent group is going to fit into a whole population. They're all going to have scars on their knees. They could pick each other out on a beach and say, I know when you were born, roughly. Yep.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting, Mike. I never even thought about that.
Chills. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what does. Like, where is the breaking point? You know, that's what I keep asking. And that's what I think, you know, you and Kristen were talking about in the last Woo podcast, is like, what do we need to do to try to bend this curve? You know, how do we change this culture that's spiraled out of control for the past 20 years? You know, does it involve just like one club that is very successful? Does it involve trying to, you know, I know that the Whoop does team things. I mean, Joe and I brought on somebody from Whoop for the marketing to try to talk about what it would involve to try to get a team or a club involved in it and like actually monitoring the kids. Cause I feel like if one club is successful and injury rates are down and they're just crushing it, everyone's going to turn heads and be like, what are you doing? You know?
Yep. No, absolutely. And really it's education. That's where it is. And you know, I hate to say we have to wait for like that right group to come along. Now, unfortunately for you all, there is that group out there. So through Whoop, I actually work with this nonprofit affiliated with Nike called Voice in Sport. And it's great. So like once a month, I just spend, you know, an hour at night talking about sleep and the importance of planning sleep around academic schedules and training schedules and the menstrual cycle to like youth sports around the country. But, you know, there's other people who are doing it too. If you look at successful, I think, men's and women's programs with reduced injury rates, like that's a good place to start too. When I was at Walter Reed, we actually worked and I don't know if it was luck or what, but we worked with Towson University's lacrosse program. Nationally ranked historically, men's and women's lacrosse program. The year we worked with them, they both teams won the national championships in D1. And what's unique about Towson's program is their strength coaches realize that men and women are different and that testosterone is, right, a hell of a drug. Mm-hmm. Testosterone lets you continue to build strength and muscle with minimal reductions and gains across a season, where women may never reach their true like one rep max. Women are, we're really good at operating at about 90%. And if we are on a sustained program at like 80 to 90% across the season, that's how we build strength. And you know, Towson's program, they really figured this out. And if you looked at their strength and conditioning program and mapped it onto in-season injuries, it was very low. And you know, I think that's another great place to start, is to look at what success looks like from an injury perspective, and then how these collegiate coaches are differently training their men and women's programs, because they are out there, you know.
Allison, I know that we're using up as much possible time with you, so I appreciate and I value your time. I do have one other question that may kind of cross over some of the things that we talked about, but can you get in a little bit of detail about explaining what circadian rhythms are and,
sure.
and what does that kind of, for the layman out there, you know, really doesn't understand what that is.
Yeah, sure. So that's my bread and butter. So a circadian rhythm, circadian means about a day. And basically what it is our bodies and our brain have these internal clocks that tick around 24 hours. And there's essentially a clock in every single muscle of the body. And each clock has a different physiological role, right? So the clock in the liver is going to control glucose release. The clock in the brain is going to control alertness and different, you know, types of cognitive functions. The clock in the stomach is going to control digestive processes. And so these clocks have to work together to make sure that hormones are secreted on time, at, you know, the right hormone at the right time, the right immune process at the right time, the right cognitive process at the right time. And they stay on time if everything in the environment is consistent. So they're getting food at the same time, they're hydrating at the same time, they're practicing at the same time, they're going to bed and they're waking up at the same time. The more external cues that you could give these biological clocks, the more optimal health is. And you know, the worst examples of this we have are shift work, right? We know that mm-hmm. shift work takes off 10 to 15 years of somebody's life. This is what I think is the bread and butter of circadian rhythms, is our body is programmed to, it's a ticking time machine, it is just a ticking clock. And as long as those, it's being fed the right cues at the right time, it's going to function optimally.
Michael, do you have anything to wrap this up? This has been, incredible. This is more than 15 minutes of juice. It's powerful. I really thank you for your service. Thank you for your time. This has been fantastic stuff.
Yes, no, absolutely. So I'm sorry I had to give you, we had a chat for my car, but you know.
Hey, listen, it's clear as day. And again, it's about the information that you've been able, the questions that we're asking are a lot of probably questions, just like when you're in class, like no question is a dumb question, and the person next to you probably wants to ask the same one. So we got parents that are probably wanting to ask the same type of questions that we're asking, and you're breaking it down for us. So I thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you need anything else, you know, I'm always here for you. You know, youth sports, especially female sports, is definitely a passion of mine. I guess one thing I didn't share is, you know, I feel I was very lucky, because I was, you know, I was a gymnast growing up, and I was a gymnast in Ohio and Michigan. And so I was part of that era of coaches, right? That, mm-hmm. used to, let's, for lack of better words, be emotionally abusive. Mm-hmm. And I had, we had a track coach in college who actually got fired for emotional abuse because she, yeah. like there are so many women on our team who had eating disorders because of yeah. her. And it was, you know, it was very heartbreaking, right? Because I knew better because I was able to survive. And I hate to use that term, but I did like the gymnastic years of high school. But so I feel very strongly about youth sports mental health, especially with females, mm-hmm. because there's still a lot of females in my generation who had this old block, an old guard of coaches who didn't come out as resilient and as, you know, who didn't come out from this like I did. Yeah. So I feel very passionate about this.
Mike, I always let Mike finish up and wrap it off because he's great at just closing it all and bookending it for us. So go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, it just comes down to, you know, building the mastermind group like we talked. Joe and I try to surround ourselves by, you know, just really sound professionals, people who like, you know, have a background like yourself and just really kind of understand what they're talking about and know. Because like you said, you know, everything is social media these days. And I think our toughest battle, especially with the younger generation, is they see something on Instagram and immediately believe it or fall for it because it looks cool or it sounds cool. And we're in an age of information, but now you have to verify what that information is. You know, what's your background? Yep. What's your education? What's your exposure? You know, what have you done to kind of prove your worth and what you've done, you know, because anybody could just write a book. Anybody could say anything. You know, it's also a liability too. And we try explaining that to some of the younger professionals that we deal with. And it's hard because yeah. there's a lot of things that look sexy on social media and you want to attach yourself to that. And it can be misleading. So, you know, things like this podcast really help because, you know, we post this to our community and we try to get the right information in front of people. And it's great to always have you as a resource because, you know, we could always maybe pick your brain on stuff or tag you in something or share something with you and have you chime in. And especially too, for a lot of the females we deal with, sometimes it's comfortable for them to talk to another female professional.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's different. You know, in college, like the guys and gals, we used to train together, but the two males versus females, we had a very different experience with this single coach, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because what the females thought is emotional abuse that the guys on our team didn't see it at all. You know, they thought right. she was incredibly nice, but it sometimes it takes a female to, you know, put it in perspective, just like it would take a male to put it into perspective.
Yeah. Where could people find you? Where's the best places, social media?
I mean, really, it's just Instagram. I refuse to be on Twitter. You know, I read enough emails and articles and other things in the day. I don't need to read any more words. So Doc Jock, ZZZ, DocJockZZZ, I believe. I mean, that's how you found me. I'm pretty good about, you know, checking my social media. So.
Okay. All right. Cool. Mike, did you have anything else there? I know you're.
No, good. That is it. This was awesome. Right.
Where do they find you, Mike?
I mean, I'm on Instagram, honeybadger_juicy and LinkedIn. I'm on there. Just a mix of stuff too, with training and, you know, what we're doing in the clinic, research stuff, things like this. So it's a mix of everything, you know, still some of the things that I'm doing, my training and competition and also professional side, you know, try to keep it fun and light and also educational. So both of those, LinkedIn, Instagram.
Fantastic. You can find me at coach_Haas, H-O-S. LinkedIn, it's Joe Haas. And if you go on to YouTube, it's Coach Haas. You know, I'm on as many social platforms as I can be on to kind of get the education out to the masses as well. Thank you again, Allison, for your time. We'll hope to have you back on again sometime soon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So thank you for your time this evening.
All right. Have a great night.
All right, you Allison. Too.
Take go care. Navy.